remark. So let's welcome the remark. We have six guests from academic institutions which have programs in sacred music who will talk about their programs. And they are Susan Tracy from Ave Maria University in Florida, Anne Labunski, our gracious hostess for this meeting here at Duquesne, Sister Agatha Ozaw, is she here? Is she here at Duquesne? Yes, you're here at Duquesne. Paul Weber from Franciscan University in Steubenville. Peter Jeffrey from Notre Dame. And Kurt Potorak, our well-known Kurt Potorak from Christendom College. So I would call them up now one at a time to give a brief description of their program, after which we'll then subject them to some questions and then open the floor for your questions.
Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Good, good. All right. I brought a friend along with me to show you some things, my computer. So I'd like to begin with the full 70-voice AMU choir singing an excerpt by Michael Haydn. Tradition. Ave Maria University offers a Bachelor of Arts degree in music. This implies a music major within a liberal arts framework. The Ave Maria University music program incorporates a general education core, an integrated liberal arts core, which distinguishes it from institutions offering a Bachelor of Music degree. We do not offer a Bachelor of Music degree, nor do we offer a Bachelor of Music Education degree. And here is just a quick look at the liberal arts core, just the course. Everyone takes the same courses, they just have a choice in sciences and math. In our sacred music program, we have four key components. We have the music core and the sacred music elective concentration. So we have applied music first, which includes individual lessons. lessons, ensembles, and conducting they must take, music theory, music history, and sacred music as a concentration which the students may elect. So we'll go through each component first, the performance concentration. You can see there, for applied music, we chose to limit ourselves to the vocal and keyboard arts. We made a deliberate choice in order to optimize our resources for a really exemplary program. If you want to find a comparative institution, try to imagine a Catholic Westminster Choir College. We also, the choral program, which is the music department's most visible presence in the university community, and a proud ambassador of AMU's academic and spiritual values in the wider Southwest Florida region. Again, our focus is on choral vocal arts and allied keyboard arts so that we maximize our resources in those areas and gain a higher level of achievement. We do not have the burden of maintaining and building student instrumental ensembles. Thus, we collaborate with professional musicians, most often the first-rate musicians of the Naples Philharmonic Orchestra. The music director is Jorge Mester, for those of you who know your orchestras. Here's a short excerpt from the Kyrie 2 of Bach's Mass in B minor, sung here by the chamber choir. Skills. We focus on giving students compositional competencies to encourage and nurture compositional talent, to help students think about music from a composer's perspective, and to help them develop discernment and judgment, especially in these days when people do not really exercise that judgment. Music history, the sequence in music history at AMU seeks to develop a sense of cultural history in general, as well as a detailed knowledge of the development of musical style through the ages. Insofar as the music theory sequence fosters the craft of musical composition, the historical survey provides the music student with a grasp of the organic contingency that exists among the various periods and styles of music. We see the music history textbook as an adjunct to the study of primary sources, the score study with guided listening, and study and discussion of historical source readings. Now, the sacred music concentration, we offer our students this elective concentration, which emphasizes the restoration, preservation, and cultivation of the Catholic Church's heritage of sacred and liturgical music. In addition to supplying a broader view of musical practice, the sacred music concentration richly supplements the skill set required for positions of musical leadership in the Catholic Church, a kind of specialization which builds on the rest of the curriculum so that students understand the Church's mind on this music, especially the presumptive and positive privileging of Gregorian chant and sacred polyphony. Organ study at Ave Maria University. Here are some examples of musical activity within a liturgical context at AMU. In 2008, for the dedication of the oratory, the choir sang, among other things, Benedicta Filia, a commissioned work by Harold Bodine. And we have started an annual All Souls Requiem Mass. You can see last year's solemn Requiem Mass in the extraordinary form, and next year's will be the 4A Requiem. And our ensembles provide music for both forms of the Mass regularly. organ study. We see a picture here of the Marshall and Ogletree Opus 5 installed in 2008. This is the same company that recently built the organ for Trinity Wall Street. And so we have that, and then we have our two practice organs, an Alvor and Galante 3 manual and a Wix 2 manual. There's a little bonbon for you, a roulade by Bingham. That's demonstrating the Marshall and Ogletree organ. Okay, and then just a sample of some of the polyphonic repertoire that the AMU choirs have sung in the last 3 years. All works except the Bach and the Pärt were sung in liturgical context. All right, our program is among the newest, and we have had 3 classes graduate. Some students have gone on to graduate school, while others are in parish work. So you can see what they're doing there, too, at Westminster, one at the University of Iowa. That student has a 2-year fellowship in addition to supplemental scholarships. What makes music study at AMU different? Individual attention, optimal student-teacher interaction, extensive campus-wide engagement in music. 20% of the student body overall is active in ensembles. There are excellent opportunities for gaining individual performance experience because of our smaller size and because we use professional instrumental ensembles. Student conductors have the opportunity to conduct one of our major ensembles. Exemplary student composers have the opportunity to hear their works performed. Our faculty, Timothy McDonald, is the chairman of our department. And this was not meant to come back, but it's so delightful. And myself, and then Lynn Kraling, I'm organ. Lan Lam teaches piano and coordinates our applied music. Rebecca Osterman, who's attended the colloquium 2 times, music theory, and we have 4 adjuncts, 3 in voice, 1 in piano. And just additionally, the music department is actively involved in the promotion of sacred music in our region. Musica Sacra Florida, the Florida chapter of the CMAA, held its 2nd annual Gregorian chant conference on the campus of AMU. Jeffrey Tucker was our keynote speaker, and liturgies included 2nd Vespers of St. Joseph, celebrated by Father Brian Austin, FSSP, and a Misa Cantata, celebrated by Father Samuel Weber, OSB. Over 60 people attended from all over Florida, as well as from Georgia, Alabama, Missouri, and Michigan. All right, I'd like to end with one last brief choral excerpt, the final section of Bach's motet, Lobet den Herrn, sung by the Chamber Choir.
Now can we hear from Anne Labunsky, Duquesne University.
First, I would like to officially welcome you personally to Duquesne. When I went to Chicago last year for the CMAA convention, the first thing that occurred to me was that it would be a good idea for all of you to come here this year. And I'm very, very happy that that has worked out. I hope that that will just be the first of many times that you will come to Duquesne. I think maybe I have served at Duquesne longer than anyone, perhaps except William Mart. I was hired at Duquesne in 1969 as a part-time teacher, and then was hired full-time in 1972. This is the only job I've ever had, other than working in churches, which I love very much. Then, when I came to Duquesne, all that there was what happens in many universities. There was, quote, an organ department, and what was taught was organ. There were no other support courses. There were no courses in sacred music. At that time, it was only shortly after the council, and things, as you may, some of you remember, were in a great state of flux. But it seemed clear to me that there needed to be a Catholic school which would have a degree, would have degree programs in sacred music. And so I worked with my dean for several years, and then in 1976, we established two degree programs in sacred music, on the undergraduate program and on the graduate program. So we have, unlike Ave Maria College, we have music degrees. We have a Bachelor of Music degree with a concentration in sacred music. And we have a Master of Music degree in sacred music. For a short period of time, on the graduate level, we had a concentration of an instrument besides organ, a voice. But we found finally that that was not very successful. And so the only instrument which is permitted now is organ in both the graduate and undergraduate areas. What distinguishes our program is the support courses as well as the training in organ, which is not just the literature, but we have many courses. We call that service playing. The courses, the things that I've been teaching you in these each day at 10 o'clock, the beginning service playing, how to play hymns, how to harmonize melodies, how to do figured bass, all of that I teach over a four-year period, starting with the most elementary skills and then gradually developing that in improvisation. One of our students won the National Improvisation Competition sponsored by the American Guild of Organists a few years ago. One of the things that we have that other schools may not insist on is the American Guild of Organists certification program. And I have worked very closely with, I almost hate to say the word, but they do have some good things, the National Pastoral Musicians. I've been involved with them too, and I worked with them to provide a certification for the pastoral musicians as well, and through the American Guild of Organists. So we have joint programs in the service playing and the colleague exam. So all of our students have to take one of those exams, whether it be the most elementary of the service playing, or some have gone as far as to get the FAGO. What are the other courses that we offer? It is a requirement to take Gregorian chant. And over the years, we've had a number of illustrious teachers teach this course.
I think of Ted Marrier. I think of Francis Schmidt. I think of Father Farrell. It's almost the history of Gregorian chant in America. And Ed Schaefer, I should say, too. We're very happy to have him teach the course several times. And now we have on our faculty a new member, Sister Agatha Oza, who is a specialist in Gregorian chant, and she will speak more, but she will also be teaching Gregorian chant. So besides that, we have courses in choral conducting, we have courses called in liturgics, practicum, in organ building, organ literature, a course which I think is very helpful for the students, and that is the internship course, which all the graduate students have to take, and sometimes the undergraduates take it as well. That is where I go to their churches and observe them in two rehearsals and two services throughout the course of the semester. And I also meet with their pastor. And this gives me a very good insight into how they really function on the practical level as a church musician. This also helps me when I'm recommending them for jobs. I can say, well, I heard what they did in their parish, and this is how it went. We are also involved on a weekly basis in providing music in our Duquesne University Chapel for the Monday liturgies. The students alternate being the lector, the cantor, and the organist. So those are some of the things that we do at Duquesne, which I think make Duquesne a very unusual school. Besides sacred music, of course, we have degree programs in technology. That's very important at Duquesne, a very popular program. We have a very important program also in music education and music therapy. So those are the main things that we offer. And I look forward to hearing from my colleagues about what you're doing.
Thank you, Anne. Let's hear from Sister Agatha at this point.
Well, let me begin by telling you where I come from. I come from Nigeria, from the southern part of Nigeria, and I belong to the order called the Handmaids of the Holy Child Jesus. I always like to talk about my foundress because she's one of those great women that I really admire. She was the first white nun to come to Nigeria, southern Nigeria. And when she came, it was like against every other person, because then Africa was considered the white man's grave. So when she was coming, even her community decided to like say, you know what, if you go to Nigeria, you don't belong to us again. And it was a very difficult moment for her. So she had to, you know, go to the Vatican to ask the Pope for a permission, since her congregation would not give it to her. And thanks be to God, she got that permission, and she came to Nigeria, worked with the women and children, because that was what the bishop wanted her to come and do. The priests were already taking care of the boys and the men, but nobody was taking care of the women and the children. So that was what she came to do. And thanks be to God. Mother died in 1962 and did not die from malaria. She died a natural death. So one of the miracles. Well, my community is the oldest in Nigeria, the first indigenous congregation, Louis International. And over the years, my superiors have really taken great interest in sacred music. And they showed that by sending me to Rome to study. It was a very rough beginning because I had no knowledge of music. So how then did they choose me? You know, in the novitiate, how you used to like play flute? I used to sing a lot because that's one of the things I got from my mother. So I would sing in the convent. I would, you know, want to leave the office always because I wanted to show off a little bit with my voice and so on. And behold, this blessed day, my superior came to me and said, "Mother said you're going to school." And I said, "Come on, I'm just professed. I'm not even up to 1 year professed. It's against the rule." I said, "Well, Mother is beating it and she wants you to go." And I said, "Oh, thanks be to God. I think I'm going to do law. That's what I want." "No, you're going to do music." "What?" You know, and obviously Mother has been coming to the novitiate and, you know, I've been listening to me. And she just thought, "Well, let's try to see what we can do with this. Bless her soul, Mother Marie Therese." Anyhow, I started off in Nigeria bit by bit, and for some reason she told me I must never fail my exams, because I told my superior, "You know what, I'm just going to go there and fail all my exams, and then she's going to ask me to do what I want to do." And for some reason my superior betrayed me. Because she told my superior general, "Oh, Agatha says she's going to fail all her exams." Then came the long letter of obedience. "You must not fail any exam." And I'm like, "Okay." Well, thank God I did well. And after that, same superior general, Mother Marie Theresa, where God rest her soul, sent me then to Rome to worsen my situation, because I came then to the Pontifical Institute for Sacred Music, and the first sounds I heard just like frightened me, because everybody was like on the organ or the piano, and I'm like, "What?" I was just, you know, first of all, the most interesting one was I had no knowledge of the language, okay? So it was Italian. And one of my sisters was there, of course, to take me to the school to register. And who was on the table then? One Father Robert Skerris. And my sister was busy interpreting between Father and myself, because Father was speaking Italian. And I never knew he was an American. I never knew he understood English. And, I kept telling my sister, "Tell him I don't have a place to stay, because when I'm staying in that convent, the side cannot sing, the side cannot play anything. So tell him, you know." And my sister said, "You wait first, let's get your admission." And Father was just sitting down there, like, smiling at the table. So my sister was like finishing the game, and I didn't like perceive that she was telling Father that I wanted to leave the place I was staying. And I said, "You know what, sister, I'm not going to stand up from this chair if you don't tell this priest that I don't have a place to stay." And at that point, Father said, "Yes, sister, can I help you?" And I'm like, "Oh." I said, "Do you speak English?" And he said, "Yes, I am an American." And I'm like, so I told him everything, and he said, "Would your superiors want you to stay in the college?" I said, "Of course." I'll ask my superior to, you know, write a letter. Because by then, Mother was ready to do everything just to make me sit and do sacred music. So it was like she was ready to dance according to my own, you know, tune. Well, Father got me into the college and I started off. But then I had to go to another school to do courses in order to catch up with the courses that were being done in the Pontifical Institute for Sacred Music. And my first classes in chant was like, oh boy, I'm back to this chant thing, you know. I don't think I love it so much, you know. But as time went on, the years went by, I fell in love with the chant. And I wrote to my superior general and said to her, "You know, I think I want to really, really specialize in chant." And she said, "Well, go ahead." Like I told you, she was ready to let me do anything just to keep me there. So that was how I started off studying the chant. You know, great place to study chant because it gave you all the opportunities to look into manuscripts. Was able to visit Einsiedel, touched the Gaul manuscripts, the Lorn manuscripts, and other manuscripts. Went around Italy from one big library to the other, looking at various manuscripts, even the Milan manuscripts in Milan and so on, the Ambrosian rites and so on. So that gave me a very great opportunity. And again, I wasn't only interested in singing the chant, and I decided to really like focus on paleography and semiology. And that is what I like doing now. Fast forward, we're done with Rome, finished there with my bachelor's, licentiate, and magisterial, that's master's simply put in English, in sacred music, specializing in Gregorian chant. Went home, and after 2 years, came back to Rome for 1 year, and then sent to the United States. This time for what? Ethnomusicology. Well, I started off from the University of Pittsburgh, where I graduated in 2008 with a PhD in ethnomusicology, of course, with a focus on women, dance, and music, according to my foundress. You know, she was interested in women. So that's what I do, and thanks be to God, I got into Duquesne, wonderful school, and a place where you really can get challenged because of all the diversities that we have, the books, the courses that are being offered, and so on. So in Duquesne here, I do world music, I do perspectives in ethnomusicology, I do African musics of Africa. I don't say African music, I say musics of Africa. So we're looking at it now from a different perspective. And then the gendering of music. So what has happened to my sacred music? Is that lost? No. Dr. Anne Laduski has been very, very gracious in tapping whatever knowledge I have. And she invites me, you know, to teach paleography class and semiology, and we have been conversing a lot about expanding this. Expanding it in such a way that we'll be able to develop a scholar very soon, build up a scholar very soon, so that whatever we learn in class, the students can simply and will be able to put it in practice. And so that's where we are for now. Thank you.
Let's now hear from Paul Weber from Franciscan University in Steubenville.
Thank you, Dr. Mart, and thank you, Anne, for hosting this wonderful event. My first time at the colloquium was last summer. My friend David, I'm sure you've all met David Hughes by now, had been telling me that I needed to be here forever and ever and ever. And last year I finally went to the colloquium, and all of these faces I'm looking out at, I met you all like in a week, but it seems like I never remember names, but I remember everybody's name. This is such a wonderful event, so thank you for hosting this evening. Franciscan University, which is about 40 minutes that way, is a small undergraduate, largely undergraduate, liberal arts college, about 2,500 students, with only graduate programs in theology and philosophy. And of course, those of you who are fans of EWTN, you may have seen some of our people on the television and have gotten sort of a picture of what the university is like. Well, about 5 years ago, I arrived at the university, and our then dean said, I need you to develop a music program. And I said, okay, when would you like this to happen? And he'd say, right now. And I said, well, fine, what resources do I have? He said, well, you have faculty, you have rooms, what more do you need? Very well. So I looked around at the university, and I looked at previous efforts to get a program going, and I looked what needed to happen at the school. And as Dr. Tracy has mentioned, who is my predecessor at Franciscan, it's amazing to see these sacred music programs shooting up at little places here and there. And I thought, well, with a small school, we can have an excellent specialized Catholic program right here at an excellent Orthodox Catholic school where everybody's just on fire, but they don't have chant, they don't have polyphony, they don't have all these things except in this small, wonderful group of people that insist on having it. So I drew a program that was a Bachelor of Arts in Sacred Music. So it's a sacred music program integrated with a normal Bachelor of Arts degree. So what does normally somebody do when they go to college? Right out of high school, and they go to college, and somebody shoves you into music theory. A number of you in this class, in this room, have gone through that terrifying, life-changing, altering experience. And the few of us who enjoyed it get to inflict you with this wonderful experience. But if you're going to have a Catholic program, you have to look to the music of the church and you have to be guided by it. So when you have entered your second year of music theory, of course, meanwhile, the university is putting you in courses like Fundamentals of Catholicism, the Foundations of Western Civilization, where you learn that Thomas Aquinas isn't just a saint. You go to your second year, and instead of just continuing on with your music theory, you have to take Gregorian chant. And then you have to take another semester of Gregorian chant. And meanwhile, you're in my scola, where we sing a lot of Gregorian chant, by the by. And we do this in order to prepare for the liturgy. Now, of course, many of you, I'm sure, have an idea of what Franciscan University is like. There are guitars. There really are. There are guitars. There are praise bands in Eva. That's not all there is. Anymore. The students, when they get done with their second year of theory, they've had a year of chant, they've had 2 years of scola. And then they go on into music history, right? This is normally what you do in a conservatory. You've been tortured for 2 years in theory, and now you know what every chord and every Roman numeral and every figured bass number is all about. And you've written some pieces by that. Then you go into music history for a year. And then you go into conducting. And you have a sacred music colloquium, not as grand as this, of course, but we go through all of the liturgical books, the motu proprios, and apostolic constitutions, and you know the names of all of the piouses and all those wonderful people who gave us all of the ammunition we need to change the world. But it's all integrated. All of this that we do is in order to go down to the chapel once a month and sing for the Sunday Extraordinary Foreign Mass, to go down to St. Peter's Church downtown Steubenville and sing for the Ordinary Foreign Mass, to come into Pittsburgh regularly and sing at St. Boniface Church, to give concerts, for instance, on the Sacred Music series at Heinz Chapel at the University of Pittsburgh. If any of you have free time, I hope you can make it over to Oakland. It's a beautiful part of town. But it's the normal conservatory-style program integrated for the sole purpose of adorning the sacred rites with suitable melody. And that's what we do. Now, I was hoping I'd be able to make this announcement, since I'm supposed to talk about how impressive we are, right? Aside, as if Gregorian chant isn't impressive enough. I'm happy to also say that in the last month, the Sacred Music Program has entered into a partnership with St. Peter's Church in Steubenville, which is a beautiful parish. If you ever want to, if you have free time, go to Steubenville, see St. Peter's Church, beautiful place. But we'll be able to offer scholarships now for our students to provide music down there while also studying in the scola. So we're expanding now to actually a parish setting. So, aside from, of course, the sacred music, which is, of course, the heart and soul of everything we do, we also have a concert choir. Chorale, which gives concerts. We also have the Franciscan Chamber Orchestra, which is regularly augmented by professionals from Pittsburgh. And of course, we will regularly bring people in. I didn't think to actually play a PowerPoint beautiful presentation with recordings, which was wonderful. And it's so exciting to see that that Ave Maria is also doing just beautiful and wonderful things. I mean, it's thrilling to know that there are colleagues out there that are striving for this beautiful thing that we experience while we're at the colloquium. But lest I leave you entirely in the lurch, when you go out there, there are CDs you can take of our program. You can see they're all recordings from the last academic year, so you'll see what we do in a typical academic year. But I imagine that's all I've got to say, and I'll try to keep it brief. So, thanks.
Let me call on now his colleague from Franciscan University, Alana Keenan, who teaches the voice aspect of the sacred music program there.
My interview here at Franciscan in Pittsburgh, and well, in Steubenville, and fortunately Paul made a very wise decision and hired me. Paul gave a very good description of what the program is and what we do, and one of the things that I want to highlight is the idea of, at Franciscan University, there's so much personalized attention. We have private voice, private organ lessons, private piano lessons. All of our majors are required to have a secondary instrument. So they take their primary instrument, which is about an hour of instruction a week, plus studio class where they're performing for their colleagues. In addition, they have to take a secondary instrument. For our voice majors, it has to be keyboard of some form. For organists, they have a year of me. Mm-hmm. We want to make one of the things that Paul and I are very, very much committed to is making our majors as marketable as possible in whatever environment. And so what we really want to do is develop the skills of our students, not just in their primary instrument, but in other areas too. One of the big things that we did this past year was the Bax de Huda, Membra Jesu Nostri, for Palm Sunday, well, the night before Palm Sunday. And we gave our students the opportunity to take part as soloists, as instrumentalists, and as a choir. We gave them the music over Christmas and said, come back, learn this, and we will start rehearsals. And so we try to make everything as professional as possible. We make our students learn their music and develop their own skills so that by the time they leave Franciscan, they're ready to lead ensembles because they've had to become leaders at Franciscan. One of the things that I'm most proud of, in addition to our extraordinary form every month, we also do Vespers, Compline, and also our students have begun to take an active role in music ministry, taking over some of the masses and choosing the music for the liturgy and applying the skills and applying the ideas that we've been teaching them. And that is really one of the things that I'm most proud of. This past year we graduated. It was our third year, so we had our very first two majors graduate, one of them Casey Palmer. She was an organist, and the other was a voice major. When I was hired, there were only two majors. I came into a program where there are two organists and no voice majors. Next year we will have 25 majors. The idea is that we're going to continue to grow, but not so much that we don't give that personalized attention. And that is really what we're there for. Being there for the students, making music with them as colleagues, and giving them the tools to go out and change and work as musicians, work in graduate school, and do whatever they want within music, but knowing that they're competent musicians and that they can compete with anyone else from any other university. Thank you.
There is now a new master's degree program at Notre Dame, and Peter Jeffrey will tell us something about that.
Hi. The master's sacred music program at Notre Dame actually started about 5 years ago, but it started literally from scratch, literally nothing when they started. I only came there this year, so it was my first year there. Among the reasons why I came, I used to be at Princeton University, and you know, you may know there was a time when people like Jacques Maritain taught at Princeton University, but that was a long time ago, and it's not like that. And I used to walk around and I said, you know, the state of Catholic liturgical music could really use some work. And I know what it needs, but nobody at Princeton cares. So I'm just going to share with you, I developed this Jeffrey's six-point program for the renewal of Catholic liturgical music. And the first one is, there should be some kind of standard or certification at the diocesan level, at least, if not the national level. First of all, to get away from the idea that, well, anybody can do sacred music. You know, I know a kid who plays the guitar. In addition to that, to somewhat standardize what should a person know to be able to do that. And professionalize it to the point where you can even start talking about improving remuneration, improving job security, so you can't just be dismissed by the new pastor just because there is a new pastor. Whatever. Now, what would that entail? Well, one thing would be, guess what? Gregorian chant. And my argument for that is, first of all, Gregorian chant is the music of the Roman Rite, right? Am I right about that? So I figure, even if you're determined to spend your entire career doing vernacular liturgies in the ordinary form because that's what you believe in, if you don't know about Gregorian chant, how do you even know what the music of the Roman Rite should be like? So every Catholic musician should know Gregorian chant. And if they did, here are some of the things they would learn. Point three, Gregorian chant is not pop songs. That is to say, the music of the Roman Rite is not pop songs. What people actually sing in the Roman Rite are the texts of the Roman Rite and the Psalms. Therefore, even in vernacular liturgies, the ideal ought to be psalmody and the singing of the liturgy, not pop songs. And if that were the case, Gregorian chant and the treasury of sacred music would not seem so exotic, so strange, so unfamiliar. So that's point three. Point four is, when you are going to have hymns, in the tradition of the Roman Rite, hymns are doctrinally sophisticated. They teach actual dogma, theology, patristic, medieval theology, not just, you know, how should we feel about it, or whatever. There are Christian traditions where worship is how do we feel about it, but the Catholic tradition is not one of those. When there are hymns, they should be doctrinally meaty hymns. The fifth is, you have to form people to be adult Christians, which includes people who participate fully in the lay role in the liturgy. So you start young, you get the children, you foster children's choirs. Also, when you have formation to receive sacraments, children should be taught to sing parts of the liturgy or psalms that are specifically connected to that sacrament. And then you're gradually training people to become fully participating adult lay Christians. And six, you're really going to like this one. Train the theologians. You may have heard this word enculturation. Like, we can't do Gregorian chant classical music because that's nobody's culture. You have to do things that are from people's culture, so that means pop songs. Who says that? Well, it tends to be, you know, academically trained liturgists, theologians, right? You know people like that. The thing with that is culture is a complex phenomenon for which there is a very substantial academic field that studies culture. Most theologians and liturgists who talk about enculturation have never studied culture, do not know anything about the study of culture, have no concept of how people study culture or anything. In other words, they don't know. In other words, they don't know what they're talking about. So, push back. Develop a field of Christian Catholic ethnomusicology that does deal with culture and musical culture and the history of culture, and push back and say, theologians, liturgists, you want to talk culture? We're ready. Yep. So I was walking around with all this, you know, and nobody cared. I don't even know if Maritain would have cared, but anyway. One thing led to another. I got into this discussion with Notre Dame and eventually decided to go there. And what we have right now is a master's in sacred music degree. Right now it's 2 years. We admit 4 people a year in organ and 4 people a year in a track that's called choral vocal. One thing that we offer, we have probably the leading PhD program in liturgical studies in Notre Dame, and people who come in the MSN program can take some of those courses with our liturgical faculty. We have, so far we've been able to get internships for every student, so about half the students work in campus ministry, which is very extensive in Notre Dame. There's a chapel in every dormitory. There's masses all over the place. Not a lot of divine office. That's another thing we've got to work on. And the other half work in actual churches. And our students are not all Catholic, and some of them work in churches that are not Catholic. But we have been able to support every student in that manner, and we hope to continue doing so. The faculty we currently have who are heavily involved in the MSN, we have Michael Driscoll, who's in the liturgy program. We have Craig Kramer, who's our leading organist. We have Mary Franson, who's a musicologist specializing in the Baroque period. And we have Alex Blatchley, who specializes in the Renaissance period. We are, however, hoping to expand. We have significant money. We have significant donors. We have a fund to build up the library. We have a beautiful Baroque style organ in a specially built organ hall. We have wonderful performing spaces in the what's called the DPAC, the Bartolo Performing Arts Center, but we are hoping to expand. We're working on the conducting side. We hope to bring in some master classes with world famous conductors. We hope. Okay, it hasn't happened yet, but we're working on it. we have a position open, just opened, for what's called World Music and World Christianity. So that the pushback part of it is really happening. If anybody who's interested in applying for that position can contact me. What else are we doing? We're hoping to have some more positions and revise, expand the curriculum, possibly expand the number of students. There's a lot of expansion that we believe will be coming in the next few years. But we're just getting started. But it's going to be an exciting time, and we hope some real difference is going to get made on a national and international basis in Roman Catholic liturgical music. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Now let me call upon Kurt Podorak from Christendom College.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to start off by reading a little something from our bulletin about our music program. Start off with a quote. "The man that hath not music in himself, nor is not moved with concord of sweet sounds, is fit for treasons, stratagems, and spoils." That, of course, is William Shakespeare, Merchant of Venice. Because true education involves the domestication, not the suppression, of the soul's raw passions, and since music touches this non-rational part of man, an education in good music is vital. Aristotle, for instance, held music to be the most important of subjects in the early education of the children of his day, not because it is necessary or because it is useful, but simply because it is liberal and something good in itself. And this is precisely the definition of the liberal arts, the study of things that make us free, more human, and truer to our nature, and not simply the acquisition of particular vocational skills that help in getting a job. It was with the coming of the Christian dispensation, however, that a significant new facet was added to the ancient world's high estimation of music and education. With the regular, even daily, celebration of the Mass and Divine Office, music became an important part, an integral part, as various 20th century popes and Vatican II would later teach, of the worship of the triune God. So to the end of improving the musical ars celebrandi of the Church in the first millennium, for example, Charlemagne ordered in 789 AD that schoolboys needed to learn, quote, psalms, notes, chants, the computus, and grammar in each monastery and bishop's house, end quote. Thus, the monastery and the episcopal schools of the day, the equivalent of today's grammar and secondary schools, were in essence turned into choir schools. This was a normal means of education for youth for centuries, but this was not merely the learning of practical skills necessary for the performance of a religious ritual. This was, this was schooling in a liberal art, which enabled its predecessors, or its practitioners, to be free, more human, truer to their nature in their leisure time. And what is the most important thing that a man, understood properly as homo religiosus, can do in his leisure time, especially on the day of rest, the dies domini, but to worship God in song. As St. Augustine wrote, cantare amantis est. Song is an expression of love, the love of God. To this end, Christendom College cultivates the treasury of sacred music, whose integral parts include Gregorian chant and the sacred vocal polyphony of masters such as Palestrina, Victoria, and Josquin du Pré, under the direction of a competent Kapellmeister, the words from my predecessor. The students strive to render present in resonant beauty the sonic vesture of divine worship. This is a part of the college's proud heritage of maintaining a high liturgical culture, which includes choral ensembles that sing at the college's liturgy. the Christendom Choir, which sings polyphonic motets in mass settings, and the Schola Gregoriana for Men, which beautifies the Sunday liturgy as well by chanting the traditional propers. 4 annual choral scholarships and a minor in liturgical music are also part of the college's liturgical music program. Along with Pope Benedict XVI, we endeavor, quote, to seek what is worthy of the church's worship, for beauty and love form the true consolation in this world, bringing it as near as possible to the world of the resurrection, end quote. Now, let me be very clear that we are not a university. We are not a big college with a music department. We are a fairly small liberal arts college, about 400 students. So we offer a minor in music. So I just want to be very clear about that. We've had it for 2 years, which I established it. We've had 4 graduates so far, and it looks like things are going fine. Christendom College is the place to go, not if you want to be a music major, so let me specify that, but if you want to study, say, history or theology or philosophy, and if you want to experience a regular liturgical life. We do a Novus Ordo Latin Mass every Sunday. Occasionally, it's extraordinary form. So far, we've done once a semester, but that's every Sunday in Latin with the propers, with a chanted ordinary, sometimes a polyphonic one, definitely with choir motets every Sunday. We do a fairly regular, well, we do a Vespers every Sunday, but we need to beef that up too. Usually it's just me cantering it, but about twice a month I have a women's schola now, which was not established yet when we put this bulletin together. I have a women's schola that sings once a month. I have a choir, actually an alumni choir of students and former students in the area that sings once or twice a semester. So we're kind of beefing that up as well. Even though we are a small institution, we have had students go on to some minor fame in the Northern Virginia area, singing in parishes with paid section leaders. There are quite a number in that area towards D.C., and one of whom I'm very proud, and I knew her ever since she was a little girl. She's the daughter of a friend of mine. She's now a paid professional singer in the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in D.C., So we do, even though we don't have a music department per se, I'm the only music professor, and we have a minor, nonetheless, you get a regular experience of and a soaking up of a liturgical life and lots of singing opportunities. So students go on for that. So let me just very quickly tell you about what the minor is. It's an 18-credit minor. So you take one course in music history, which I teach. I have to take you through 2,000 years of music history in one semester. So it's one survey course in music history, one course in music theory and composition, which I wish was more than one, but that's all we have. A theology of worship and its music course, a Gregorian chant course, which gets you into a little higher level of the history and the technique of Gregorian chant. There is a choir apprenticeship course where the student, in order to complete their minor, they have to put together some sort of a major liturgical event, a mass, a vespers. They have to do everything, rehearse it, prepare it. A one semester of lessons in organ or voice, and a theology course. There are a number that you can choose from, ecclesiology, sacraments. There's a course in the Roman Rite. So that's the basics of it. I too did not obviously prepare a PowerPoint presentation or a very nice presentation, but instead I do have free CDs for everyone out there of just put out together. They're students and alumni. Again, those ones I'm very proud of. We put this together about 2 years ago, so that's available for free outside on the table. So thank you very much.
You see before you 7 chairs. Let's ask all of our speakers now to come up, and we'll have some questions. So come on up and have a seat. There are microphones there for you. I hope they're working. And then we'll do some questions.
Well, I do have a statement from the Catholic University, if you want to turn it.
Yes. one person was not able to come tonight, and that's Leo Nestor from Catholic University. That's an important program. And he was ill, but he did send a statement. And so Scott Turkington, who has been in contact with him, will read his statement. You can have a seat in the meantime.
Thank you, Bill.
Leo Nestor, who may be known to some of you, who is the head of the liturgical music program at Catholic University in Washington, D.C., has fallen ill and is not able to be with us tonight. And so he sent a statement to me just about an hour ago on my email, and I tried to print it out, and since I'm over 40 now, it printed out so small I can't read it. So I'm going to have to read it for my BlackBerry because I can make it. Dear Scott, thank you for speaking on behalf of the Catholic University of America Institute of Sacred Music at the Benjamin T. Rome School of Music this evening. It was good hearing your voice, blah, blah, blah. here is the first paragraph is, whom do we seek? That sounds like Leo Nestor, if you know Leo Nestor. And the answer is, those who burn. Those who have ardor, those who can daily, sanely say, zeal for your house consumes me. We all burn differently, some of us with a quiet fire, others more apparently. It matters only that one burns. Our profession, our art, and ministry is in need now more than ever of enlightened leaders who are thoroughly prepared for long years in the vineyard. We speak for the place of musical literature in the church, her chant, her polyphony, her choral, choral orchestral, and organ literatures. We encourage on behalf of the church that composers give her their very best. What do we offer? We offer a comprehensive graduate course of study in an outstanding school of music with inseparable long-standing ties to a distinguished school of theology. The world of musica sacra is by definition practice and need, multidisciplinary. Practical and applied studies in conducting, organ, composition, choral, and organ literature, choral development, vocal pedagogy go hand in hand with musicological studies. Then up the hill, for literally in that case, for liturgical and theological studies. We are incredibly fortunate to have in our dean, Grayson Wagstaff, and colleague Andrew Weaver, scholars whose specializations both in sacred music, whose specializations are, word missing, both in sacred music. Dr. Robert Grogan, emeritus organist of the Basilica, is joined by Dr. Edward Allen Moore and Professor Ronald Stoke, the latter not only a prize winner in improvisation, but a splendid teacher in the craft. Many of our students study voice during grad study. We seek to assist in the formation of well-rounded musicians, breaking stereotypes which have too long existed. We form conductors who play, players who conduct, conductors who do both, and all sing. Academic coursework and applied lessons complemented by weekly gatherings are, quote, colloquium practicum in sacred music, end quote, in which all the skills and tasks requisite to our art are taught and practiced and evaluated and improved. Each of our students is a music director in one of the parishes in the tri-state area, that being Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. It is a curricular requirement to maintain a post throughout the studies, but who would not want to be working in the parish? It sometimes makes for a difficult life when the church and academic calendars exert their adjacencies, but such is the way we all were trained in the church. The academy without the church is a lesser place. I'd be happy to correspond and speak with those attending the colloquium who'd like to know more about the study of sacred music at the Catholic University of America. And his email address is Nestor, N-E-S-T-O-R, @cua.edu.
Our grad students are highly talented, highly motivated individuals. We are a close community of 12 master and doctoral students, each of whom cares for the other. And now I also have, if I can scroll down here, composition, well, I have a, okay, choral concentrations in choral music composition, organ, and voice. Entrance requirements. The undergraduate music degree is a prerequisite, except in extraordinary circumstances. Graduate entrance examinations will be administered according to current practice. Musical prerequisites, applicants in the areas of performance, choral music, organ, and choral performance will submit a 30-minute tape, video, preferred audio to acceptable. Is this something from the website? It sort of sounds like that, doesn't it? Let me just scroll down a little bit. Yeah, this is quite lengthy. This is from their website, which outlines all of the coursework and prerequisites and entrance examinations, etc. Yeah, that is quite long. So you can go on the... you can go on the Catholic University of America Music Department website and see all of that and read all of that. And we will pray for Leo Nestor's speedy recovery. Thank you very much.
I'll have a few brief questions, and I'll ask each member of the panel to give a brief answer. I hope these microphones are working. Yes, good. Thank you. First question. About your specific programs, in specific, what opportunities are there for regular experience of liturgical music in the liturgy?
Well, quite a few. Every Sunday we have a Novus Ordo Latin Mass. Occasionally it's an extraordinary form, and during the week, there's a weekday mass with some music, two of which are Latin, and we have Vespers on Sunday. So there's quite a regular opportunity for the actual practice of sacred music.
Well, as I think I mentioned before, the Schola Cantorum Franciscana, which is the main choral ensemble of the sacred music program at Franciscan, is invited to sing the extraordinary form High Mass once a month. In addition, we sing either Compline or Vespers. We're currently working on Vespers in the extraordinary form about once a month in the next year, now that we've got it down. And the chapel is increasingly interested in our students. The chapel music ministry at Franciscan is distinct from the sacred music program. We're guests at the chapel, but they've been very gracious hosts lately. So our students have populated the 4 o'clock Sunday Mass every Sunday, I believe. Is that right? This last year, yes, every Sunday, and I believe that connection will continue.
Almost all of our students are working in parishes. I should say right from the start that our program is not exclusively Roman Catholic. We have students who work in churches, almost all denominations, but a number of them work in Roman Catholic churches. For example, St. Paul of the Cross Monastery on the south side, Sacred Heart Church in Shadyside. So there are a number who do work in Roman Catholic parishes. So the fact that they are practicing their craft on a very regular basis, and also that they're earning their livelihood while they're still students, is a very important part of our program. In addition to that, we have a very beautiful Compline choir in Pittsburgh at Heinz Chapel every Sunday evening. It is anyone is welcome to join that choir. It isn't run by Duquesne, but it is a very fine opportunity for the students. Joe Tuttle, for example, has been singing in that for a number of years. I've noticed the difference that that's made in his, he was the cantor this morning, by the way, for morning prayer, And you know, you can see how that's made a difference in his life. So that's some of the what we do liturgically.
At Ave Maria University, our students participate in the Sunday Masses and other Masses at the 10 a.m. Mass, which is an English Novus Ordo Mass. Generally, a student will be a cantor, and then our organist, Lynn Crayley, is the organist. I believe we have student organists at the 8 a.m. Mass. I'm not sure about that, but our at the 12:30 Mass every Sunday, which is the extraordinary form, the AMU choir, the 70-voice choir, the chamber choir of 20 voices, the women's Schola Gregoriana, which I direct, and the men's Schola take turns providing the music for the High Mass at 12:30 every Sunday. And most Sundays are covered by the ensembles throughout the academic year. I did mention in my presentation the special All Souls Solemn High Requiem Mass. The AMU choir has branched out, and the chamber choir went to Naples, which is about 30 miles from us, and sang Sunday Mass in the extraordinary form. And last year I took members of some of the men's and the women's Schola up to Sarasota to augment the choir there for the dedication of their new church administered by the Fraternity of St. Peter. Oh, and we do have students playing the organ at Sunday benediction. We don't have regular vespers yet, but they do that.
As I said, all of our students have an internship somewhere, either on campus, about half on campus, and about half in parishes off campus. Now, the on-campus situation, you may have heard Notre Dame described as Catholic Disneyland. Some people would leave out the adjective Catholic. It's called. But anyway, there's an extraordinary range of approaches to the liturgy going on there. We do have a weekly extraordinary form dialogue mass into which we're starting to introduce music. There's a Corpus Christi procession that had Gregorian chant this year for the first time. There are groups that do Marian devotions and things of that sort. In the Basilica itself, there are two major liturgies. The one at 10 o'clock, which is more traditional music, is I've actually broadcast on the radio. The later one is has a fairly well-known folk choir. Every dormitory has a weekly mass, and the character of those masses varies considerably from point A to point Z. But some of them are led by our students, and we are talking to campus ministry about some less explored avenues that might be profitable. So potentially there's quite a lot of opportunities.
Thank you. And now another question. You have spoken about the repertory that is the subject of most of your study and performance. What is there in your curriculum and in the approach of your program that establishes criteria for the choice of music?
In the at least two of the courses that I teach, the Gregorian chant course and the theology of worship and music, we go through the relevant documents and Gregorian chant having first place in the liturgy because it's proper to the Roman liturgy, and I actually have to give a little talk to the incoming freshmen to explain to them why we do things the way we do, because even though many of them come out of, it's interesting, an increasing number of them come out of having experienced the Tridentine Mass, and some of them come out of those communities, there's still a fair percentage who have never had any experience with that, so I have to give a little presentation and make the point and the legend that's in the church's legislation, that's in the very nature of the thing, that this is the first place, the church's actual music, and then, as I always say, then other musics are either added by means of substitution or addition to that model, which is Gregorian chant, and I'll talk about the various other types, polyphony of various sorts, or sometimes hymns, or things like that. But that's the approach that I take.
As far as the choice and criterion for literature goes, I think within, every major at Franciscan is either an organ major or a voice major. So in addition to their work in chant and in the schola, our students are involved in cutting their teeth in their chosen professional instrument. So for instance, for organ majors, if you've got to play a trio sonata of Bach in order to get out of the place, that kind of thing. And there are, of course, normal, I'll let Alana speak about the requirements for the voice majors. Within the context of liturgy, I think the tradition is very clear. The five propers, out of the Liber, the Gregorian masses or a polyphonic mass. Outside of that, we may, for instance, do an orchestra mass. A few years ago, we did the Mozart Misa Brevis in D minor. Things like that may come about. I wrote a concerted mass on the Orbis Vocator, things like that. But I think I'll let Alana speak about the voice program.
Okay. As Paul mentioned, there's a very clear idea of what the music is necessary for liturgy, and that's we pick according to those guidelines. Voice majors are like voice majors at any other university, and I think this is one of the unique aspects, actually, of the sacred music program. In addition to the sacred music, we also have to make sure that they're competent musicians in their chosen instrument. So for voice majors, that means at the senior year, they have to give a senior recital, an hour-long program of repertoire of German Lieder, French melody, that sort of thing. And we have barriers along the way to make sure that our students are meeting these targets and that the repertoire we're picking out is appropriate. We have a jury system. All voice majors have to do a jury every single semester. At the sophomore year, they have to do a barrier exam to ensure that they are where they need to be at the end of their sophomore year in order. And we pick repertoire based on meeting those targets and that they can graduate as accomplished musicians in that time.
At Duquesne, the emphasis is very much on organ and organ music. However, like I mentioned earlier, Anne and myself are discussing and talking a lot about expanding the Gregorian chant section of the program. We are doing it now, but in a very small scale. So we are putting our heads together to see how that can be expanded. And I think Anna will talk more about this.
We've had a schola on and off, for specific occasions. For example, when we had the Messiaen Festival 2 years ago, one of the recitalists did Titelu's Magnificat, and our schola, which is our organ students, sang the alternatum, that Magnificat. What I really am hoping to work on with Sister Agatha is to establish a regular schola that which will rehearse on a weekly basis and give the students the in-depth experience in singing in a schola. I would say that probably our greatest strength, as you had mentioned, is an organ, but it's to train musicians to work in the church. And so for the kind of things that I was doing at the Mass, for example, today, to be able to improvise, to understand the role of the organ, the role of choral music, to make the right choices we can't live in an ivory tower, unfortunately. I feel this week as if we are all in the most wonderful ivory tower that exists, and we wish we could, you know, like the Transfiguration, we wish we could just stay there. But we do have to come down from the mountain. But if we haven't experienced what the mountain peak is, then we don't know from what we are compromising. And so I try to give the students that experience of improvising, so that whether it's an extraordinary form of the Mass or whatever it is, that they can do something that is liturgically very, very beautiful. And I think that's one of the strengths of our program.
Also, the students are required from time to time to like have their recitals not in the school but in various churches. I think you want to expand on that.
Oh, yes. Well, we do not have a concert instrument at Duquesne yet. Hopefully, someday we will. But we are blessed to be in a wonderful city. There is an Oregon Historical Society convention going on this very week. And so the church, the organs all over the city are being played right now. There's a recital being played at the East Liberty Presbyterian Church. So we have these marvelous instruments at our disposal, and so the students do give recitals on many of the very most beautiful instruments in Pittsburgh. And I'm happy that Sister Agatha has helped. When the student plays a degree recital, we have to have at least two faculty members, and she's been gracious enough to come to adjudicate some of those recitals.
Okay, so how do we establish criteria? One course which I had on a slide that I forgot to actually talk about, all of our students, well, of course, they all must take Gregorian chant and sing in the men's or the women's schola, and anytime the choir or the schola sing at Mass, we do all of the propers. But I teach a course called Heritage of Sacred Music, which is a history of Catholic liturgical music, where we do go through different styles of, through the ages, the historical styles, but all styles in accord with what the Church has always taught at all times about sacred music. And we study the documents as we go through. We study what popes have said from the earliest days of the Church, and we read the modern documents and compare, so that we see that, in fact, throughout the Church, Gregorian chant has always held a privileged place, even if not, if it may not, it was always implicit, if not explicit. So that's basically what we do, and every single member of our department is on the same page. We all firmly believe in this and practice it and promote it.
Well, our actual curriculum is in the process of being rethought. But I did, for instance, this year start a new course on psalmody, the history of the Psalms and how they were sung from the ancient Near East to the 20th century in a number of languages. And in the fall I'll be teaching a course in hymnology and hymns. Hymns from day one till yesterday. So I do believe it's very important to have exposure to quite a wide range of repertoire. What we actually have now, as I say, we do have some informal scholars that are performing at various things. We have an official group called Schola Musicorum, conducted by Alex Blashley. We have courses in Renaissance and Baroque music taught by the faculty. We're hoping to have more early music in this, like Baroque music and Renaissance music, in a more formal kind of way. But we're not there yet. But my personal philosophy is expose students to it as much as possible, especially the good stuff. And then when the student is a professional, I'm working in a pastoral situation, the student will have a lot to draw on and will presumably have good judgment about what is possible within the community that the former student, now a professional, is working.
Okay. not specifically related to the music major, but every student at AMU must take a non-credit, unfortunately, arts practicum course that I teach. The only the way they can get out of it is by singing in the choirs or the scholas. The course is called Gregorian Chant in Liturgy and History. And so the students who are left taking that course are usually the ones who chose not to be in choir, so they either can't sing or don't like to sing. So I've turned it into an opportunity to teach students the structure of the liturgy and all about Gregorian chant as an appreciation.
Thank you for all of these answers. Let's open it up to just a few questions, if you have them. Does anybody have a burning question? We can't take too much more time, we're running out, but yes.
I'd love to know if you've detected any change among the students that you teach in terms of their outlook towards music and the liturgy now compared to, say, whenever.
Absolutely, yes. I can only assume that all of us would say that. But, I mean, Francis can be a very charismatic place. These guys have all kinds of energy. And I'm seeing our students looking around, they're laughing. We've got a number of people from Franciscan. They're all laughing and going, but no, we get these people who have such a thrill to be making music in the church, and the only experience they've ever had has been in the typical parish world, and then they come to Franciscan for some summer conference where it's very energized and it's the life teen stuff and they're frothing at the mouth and it's just so exciting, right? And to boot, there's a monstrance, and won't we just love the monstrance, right? And they do genuinely love it. And then they come, and I get a hold of them, and they enter the Schola, and they sing Compline or Vespers or they go to the Mass, and all of a sudden they're singing a Palestrina Ordinary or a Lassus or Hostler Ordinary, and they've got a group of older students singing the propers, and honest to God they leave. Now, we haven't had many of them leave yet, but they get older, and honestly, if they're not thinking of a both and, that's great, this is great, I love it all, they actually have sort of left their former charismatic selves behind. And there seems to be a maturation process at work there. There's nothing wrong with how they came about it. I'm just happy that they came about it.
Yeah. If I could just add to what Paul says, I experienced this both at Ave Maria University and also when I was at Franciscan. And I want to tell you that when I started the Schola Cantora Franciscana in 1993, things were a lot different back then than they are now. And I understand that all the students in the chapel ministry office now, I was told that while they were waiting for the friars to accept the motu proprio, that they were all learning, reading Fortescue and now it's a pretty different there from when I was there. So.
Another question. Yes?
My question is sort of specifically to Dr. Jeffrey, but generally to all of you, and you kind of answered it, but you talked about your desire to influence Catholic music on a national level, and I'm curious as to whether you think you or your music program have influenced or has the shot at influencing not the individuals at your school, but the institution, and not academically, but spiritually.
The institution, you mean like the hierarchy?
No, your academic institution.
University.
Well, we have a tremendous amount of support from the highest levels of the university, more than we're getting from the lower levels, actually. We have a prayer session with the president every 3 months for the success of the sacred music program.
Well,
how many people in this room can say that? So we're very much supported at the top.
Let's hear one more question.
My question is, how much of a factor in church music, the church music situation, is the fact that musicians don't get paid very much? In many churches, they're not willing to put any money behind it.
I'd like to speak to that.
I'd like to speak to that in my own experience of having taught at Duquesne since 1969. Most of our students have been able to support themselves working in the church. So they're really, and actually, it's often in the Roman Catholic Church where they have been able to find full-time employment. Many times they have had to work very, very hard. Many of our graduates have taken positions in cathedrals. Well, we have one of them here from the cathedral in Altoona. But they, and one of the things that's important now, I think, in music in general, is that you have to have a very entrepreneurial spirit. There was a conference at the University of Michigan about this that was extremely successful. You have to kind of reinvent yourself. So what we find with musicians working in the church is maybe the salary isn't paying for everything, but these people, it's sort of the way it's always been, only more so. They are teaching on the side. You know, they're doing other things in music to supplement their income, but altogether it is paying them to have a good life.
Seems to me that this is a geographical difference. Mm-hmm. A city like Pittsburgh could have a musical culture that would support jobs like that. I see a difference between Los Angeles and San Francisco, for instance, where there are so many professional musicians in Los Angeles, and in the churches, musicians are regularly paid well. Mm-hmm. Then I see my own diocese, the Diocese of San Jose, where there is a policy of no salaried musicians. Every musician is paid by the service.
So the
geography of the thing is really quite diverse, it seems to me.
I thought that Peter Jeffries had a really good point as part of their 6 points there, that part of what our mission must also be is to help the clergy realize and value the importance of our work. It's not just that, you know, I remember someone said, well, how much should we pay this church musician? And the pastor said, well, no more than we pay the janitor. So it's partly an educational process where you have to help them to realize how important the music is, the important role that it has in the lives of the people. When I think of Louis Vierne at Notre Dame Cathedral, for example, he was, of course, very poorly paid, more poorly paid than any of you in any of the churches, but his influence was so very, very important. People's lives were completely changed just by hearing him play on a Sunday. So you need to think of, you don't realize maybe the huge importance that you have in the lives of so many people. And they cannot put it in words all the time, but you have to know how much you are affecting their lives.
That's a beautiful way to end our formal discussion. Our time is out, but we have a reception outside there, and you can continue informally talking with our panelists. Thank you.